It's Thursday, January 14th, 2016. It's about 5:45. Just turned on my headlamp a little while ago. I'm on a hike. A couple things just on the physical level. You know, because I've been hitting this 220 level, that is just kind of freaking me out. You know, 220 pounds. It's 40 pounds heavier than I was in high school. And then there was a time, a short period of time in 1994 at the peak of my hiking and that whole, Paradise Park, Manoa Cliffs, Sadhana that I was up to, where I was dropping to the low 180s frequently. And then that one evening in November, where the descending force came down through me so powerfully, I voided my bowels. I just had diarrhea. It just flushed me clean. It was amazing. But anyways, I think I hit 178 or so. But to be 40 pounds heavier than that is a joke. And it's just not just a numerical thing. You know, you can say, oh, you know, it's the fact that pants are hard to button on me. And I'm 50 years old, and I hope to be around another 40 years or more. And, you know, if they stop the spraying and I'm able to find a work and living situation that's more compatible for me electromagnetically. But in any event, whatever the case, I need to take better care of my joints. And that additional weight, all I would suggest to you is, if you consider yourself heavy and you have a target weight, you know, walk around a little while carrying a couple of barbells in your hands. You know, in my case, if I were to carry two 20-pound barbells, or actually I'd be satisfied with hitting 200 and being a little under that, so two 10-pounders, that is a lot of weight, especially if it's not necessary. You know, if it's not doing anything important for you, and you know, I don't know what it's doing. You know, maybe it is helping me be more sane, but I think it's wearing me out as well. But I do know that the more weight I'm carrying, the harder it is on my joints. Which brings me to what I've been up to. This is now my second walk here in Joshua Tree since getting back from the high desert. I'm in high desert right now, but I live in Coachella Valley. I've decided, you know, this is a long, you know, jeep road, dirt road, long flat trail, and rather than get to, you know, 3 miles into it, and then for the purpose of, aerobic challenge, ascend a trailless 1,000-foot or so elevation, you know, climb a peak 1,000 feet higher up across terrain without a trail through loose rubble and branches and whatever's on that hill face, where I'm twisting and turning and slipping, and because there are some steep sections and I've got to, and I'm losing my footing, or you know, I'm having to it's tweaking my knees and my hips, but I'm more concerned about my knees. And especially if I'm carrying extra 20 to 40 pounds. Good Lord. So, what I did on Tuesday night, two nights ago, is I just, instead of, you know, normally on a school night, where, you know, I don't want to be off trail anyway, just because the visibility, with these headlamps or whatever I'm wearing, it's, you get lost around here, and also you're not able to see the terrain that well. If you're walking over rubble and down steep slopes, and you need excellent visibility, and that requires daylight. So for the purpose of burning more calories and just increasing my time out here, instead of doing basically a 6 mile 2 hour walk, not including a 20 to 30 minute lying down session, just staring up at the chemtrails or the stars if they're visible. Instead of doing that, I'm actually continuing on another mile. Well, it was another mile on Tuesday, but today another 2 miles in each direction. So instead of six, I'm walking 10 miles. And I will put this to anybody out there. Hey, is a 10 mile walk after a long day at work, is that respectable? Does that show commitment? It shows something. It shows I don't have family. I don't have any personal ties that require my attention, obviously. But but I'm staying on this. Well, it is a rutted. It's a horrible road, but it's better than off the trail, and I'm able to be much more careful with my foot placement, and I experience a lot fewer steps along this way. And my hope is that by adding some time on here, hopefully I'll be able to continue doing this when it gets hotter. We'll see. I'll just mean I'm hiking later into the evening or something. I'm getting home at 11 or something, as opposed to 10, which I'm doing tonight. What I'm looking at is at a minimum doing this 3 days a week. I don't like Highway 10. I don't like all the semi-trucks. It's a dangerous road, and then the gas and the time, etc. But at a very minimum, if I'm going to be up here, you might as well make the most of it. And again, I'm hoping that this addition of 4 miles to what is normally a 6 mile trek, making it 10, with the added benefit of less strain on my joints, is going to be good for me. Because I kind of got a sense that if I'm taking a long view of my life, certainly a long view of my physical needs, then I can't afford to be tweaking my knees so much. And I know I've got some. I already have good photos, some short movies from the higher elevations around here, so I don't need that. And although there are some smoother sections, but it's just the steeper stuff along that trail. It's just particularly gnarly. I'm not on all fours at all, but there's some spots where you got to squat and shift your weight, and So here's to a life with pain-free joints. Hallelujah. And with the added benefit that, if you do your homework, you'll know that motion of left, right, left, right, left, right, where your right leg and your left arm are in harmony, and your left leg and your right arm are swinging in harmony, that sets up a whole harmonization of your nervous system and your hemispheres in your brain and whatever else. It harmonizes and strengthens and sets a tone to your body mind, and as well, it is through physical activity that lymphatic fluids are moved around, but you know, you need it all. You need all of your fluids moving around. You know, you don't want to be sitting on your sexual fluids for, you know, months on end. You know, you got to let go of that once in a while. Otherwise, you're stuck. You know, you got to give it up. Give it up to the universe. But your blood, your lymph, and everything else that flows in the body, it needs to do it. And a walk, there's not a lot out there that's can compare to walking or hiking. You know, I see in my neighborhood, you get these crews of people, you know, they sound like flocks of birds passing by, but they're on their 10 speeds or whatever speeds they are, but they're bicyclists. But they've got their tight, synthetic, colorful clothing on, their little helmets that, you know, we didn't have to wear when I was a kid. You know, a little more freedom back then. And, you know, they bike around, but sitting on those bicycle seats is associated with a whole bunch of problems. You know, prostate or erectile dysfunction, or, you know, you're applying pressure, prolonged pressure to areas that should be free of it. Also, certainly the bicycling is better than nothing. You know, it is better than a whole lot of things. But I don't like the fact that your lower extremities and your upper extremities are not harmonizing. You know, there should be a coordination of movement. And, you know, on a bicycle, the arms are doing nothing. And that's not good. I would offer that there's a cost to that psychologically, or some sort of nervous system way that, you know, the fact that your legs are pumping and your arms are motionless is impeding a deeper level of integration. Although for short periods, I mean, I know, hey, I went through months, years, standing on a stair stepper of different types, getting a sweat, pumping those legs. I guess there's a place for that. You know, it certainly gets the heart going. But again, the coordination among your limbs is just top-notch walking. And then the increased time out here. You know, if I've had trouble with my nervous system getting overcharged by my proximity to cellular radiation, yeah, you know, that is the case with the burning extremities. This is helping. This will help more. You know, the additional time in an EMF reduced environment, exercising. You know, this is adding, let's call it an hour and a half, hour and 20, hour and 30, you know, to my overall time. And that's significant. Let's see, lastly, any other physical things? Yeah, I weighed 218 this morning. I hit 220.5 a couple days ago. It was after dinner, I had some things to eat. I think I ate more after that, so I probably hit 221. But what I've been feeling the last couple of days, because it's something new, and it's because for the first time this year, and I don't think I was doing it last year either, is due to this massive matter of reducing the weight for my joints and my overall health, and just for my achieving a higher level of fitness, I'm not eating seaweed or refried beans or all this other dead stuff at lunch, and salsa and, you know, chips and who knows what else. I'm just not going there. And since Monday, I've been making a salad in the morning, packing a large BPA-free, so that's a chemical that's associated with cancer and other things. It's normally present in plastic. It's what gives plastic its nasty smell. I've been having a large green salad. It's been some romaine lettuce, all organic. Romaine lettuce, raw sunflower seeds, sprouted wildwood tofu, Spectrum organic balsamic vinegar. Or I'll use sometimes the balsamic vinegar from Costco. It's not organic, but it tastes good. It's really a good quality product. You know how much these old grapevines, I mean, I don't think they're GMO. Who knows what they're doing to them? But, and also chopped elephant garlic this week, and chopped celery. And if I have anything else, cucumbers or bell peppers. Now it goes into this large container, and I pour olive oil over it. And I am also use is it Spectrum that makes it? Let me think. Anyways, it's called Gomasu. All it is roasted sesame seeds, black or brown, and with sea salt, I think is what it is. And it comes in a little shaker, shakes some of that over everything. And this is just some good stuff. And I've been eating that. There's a few things I want to say about this, and I drench it in the olive oil. One is my complexion is improving. I feel a little bit more moisture, a little more, just vitality in my face. I look at my face and it looks clearer. It looks more vibrant. I think that happens when you're eating more live foods. Also, and this is something that I haven't had in a while, it's helping my regularity, but I'll have some pangs of hunger during the day and at night. Like this morning, I think I was up at, went to the bathroom around 4 a.m. and I had some, urinated, and I had some, pangs in my stomach. Like, and what that's telling me is that there's life, there's vitality down there. It's very easy to adopt a dietary practice that just overwhelms your natural responses, in that you just never feel hungry. You never have a hunger pang. But I can guarantee you that if you're having a large, healthy salad, big one, for lunch every day, that it's going to start doing things to your insides that you haven't felt in a while. But it's just very encouraging to feel that. But it's not just the hunger pang that I want to point to as a reason for happiness here, or a reason for, just applauding this whole action, this whole response to my body's. It's like it signals, for me at least, it signals a greater integrity, a higher rate of vibration of my gastrointestinal tract. And what that means also, though, and here's I think what it is, why I'm so happy. There's another new chemtrail under that moon. It is going up as we speak. Those bastards. Oh. Completely obliterated sky today. And just a showering of white, of particulate matter. Just insane. You couldn't even see 10 miles away, basically. It was that bad, all from the airplanes. I brought some staff outside to take a look at it. You know, telling them about, you know, Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey and, well, whatever, the Brand, what's that guy's name? Branford, Virgin Air, and Ted Turner, David Rockefeller, Warren Buffett. All these creeps decided like 5 years ago, you know, hey, we're going to take godlike action to reduce global warming. To reduce world population. So what does godlike mean? Well, godlike means taking over the weather and salting the earth. But in this case, the salt is the aluminum and other toxins we're being sprayed with that are poisonous to all life. And that's what's happening. It was ongoing already, but I think some of the higher-ups in the billionaire class were brought into the, you know, to rubber stamp this eugenics operation here for our own good, right? So the hunger pang in your stomach for me is associated with, get this, less bloating and more of a feeling of tautness, tightness, sensuousness, and more of a relaxed condition of my GI tract. It's like the inverse of bloating, where it just is pulling. You know, that's that look of a flat stomach. It's coming back. It's going to come back, but that's the beginning of it. And I already, you know, I'm feeling like I'm moving in that direction. I think the raw vegetables and the olive oil and, you know, I think the balsamic vinegar is good stuff. I know that Paul Bragg, the great health practitioner, health guru, whose books I read about 10 of his books when I was in middle school, when I did my first 10-day water fast. I hated it. I think I did three of them, I think. Two or three of them between then and high school, end of high school. I don't like fasting, but I did it. Because you just end up thinking about food all the time. But some serious cleansing going on in that, during that, those fasts. Just unbelievable. He swore by apple cider vinegar, and I know that in the videos I've watched with chemtrail aerosol spraying expert Clifford Carnicum of the Carnicum Institute and Dr. Gwen Scott, a naturopath, red wine, and I imagine balsamic vinegar, it's, you know, from the same plant, I think, draws out these synthetic life forms. That may sound like an oxymoron, synthetic life, but they are. These are things that show, that exhibit signs of life, but are obviously man-made. But we're being seeded with this stuff. It's called Morgellons disease, but it's these very, very small tubular structures that are embedded with all sorts of things, including these intercellular bacteria, like this, what was it? Not herpes, but a type of... Anyways, it's a type of bacteria that attacks your immune system, but from within the cell, in that these tubules were some kind of delivery system, in that it responds or is responsive to EMF. Oh, man. So, you know, who knows? We could all be seeded with these little micro, you know, micron-sized biological self-destruct organisms, you know, at the right time. Who knows what's going on? But, you know, I think the balsamic vinegar, and if you can tolerate it, you know, apple cider vinegar, I just don't like the flavor of it. Although I used to have a lot of it. I think that helps to kill the bad stuff in your GI tract, and, you know, in order to draw out those impurities to help eliminate them. My intuition says that that is so. And that's certainly the case with anything that's good for you. It's going to help, it's going to support the good fauna, the good bacteria, and kill the bad bacteria, or create conditions where the bad bacteria is less likely to have the upper hand. I was at a training yesterday at a site that's right next on top of a cell tower, and the staff was some of the most unhealthy, uninspiring people I've ever been around. Just drab personalities, overweight, unhealthy, and not laughing. It was obviously a toxic environment that this staff worked in, but they were, hey, it takes two to tango, but I would say the cell tower and the proximity to the freeway and everything, it was right on top of the freeway, certainly didn't help anything, help the matter. But, you know, we need to do what we can to be healthy. And so I decided today, you know, that I'm going to, or this week that I'm, you know, coming back from my vacation, I'm going to increase my time on this trail. And I'm going to leave work an hour earlier than normal. So that's an hour earlier today. And to get to make that additional time to, you know, to get an extra hour and a half in and still get home at a decent hour. You know, for me, getting home by 10, I don't like to get home after 10. So I like to shower, clean up, have a bite to eat, and be in bed by 11, if at all possible. Any other health announcements? I guess my, you know, going back to my constant refrain or my constant whine is the skies were, apart from the major haze coming down from yesterday's massive onslaught of aerosol spraying, the skies were blue today. And yet when I left school, or, you know, middle of the day, it was a solid blanket of shit, with trail upon trail and just, you know, lit hundreds and hundreds, hundreds of overflights. And, you know, to be alone in this observation is brutal. And so I'm not really sure what to do. I sent money to the geoengineering watch.org website recently, and that's because they have a legal they have a legal plan to go after the spraying. It's really tricky because this is a national security operation. This nation is under martial law. The Constitution has been suspended since, I think, September 14th, 2001. And so we're operating under something called COG, Continuity of Government. And this is all official. And Congress is supposed to reauthorize this every 6 months, and I don't think they have once. You know, we're under a state of emergency. And as Alex Jones, who I do respect in many ways, you know, he says, Congress has become vestigial. And vestigial means I think it refers kind of anatomically to an appendage that's no longer functional, no longer needed, serves no purpose anymore. And so Congress is just sort of a place for theater, you know, and to give the illusion, the appearance of a democratic a process of self-governance that has integrity, which it does not. But it's supposed to give that appearance. But in any event, I think it takes some sophisticated legal scheming to peel away to some level that is possible to reveal through legal means some aspect of the aerosol spraying. And ultimately, you know, I also gave money to the 10th Amendment Center. And a lot of this is going to come down to that. You know, when this country was founded, I don't know if it was 1776, I'm not a historian, I'm a poor student of history. All I know is, you know, they did have some ideas about freedom and limited government and state sovereignty with just minor control, minor responsibilities. Limited responsibilities to the federal government. And everything that's going on now in terms of the neoconservative path of destroying all the nation states in the world that might have a different understanding of their destiny than the United States and England's, i.e. the Rothschilds, the banker class, and spraying our skies to kill us all, or kill off 90% of us so that the elites can, you know, have their shiny city on a hill, or whatever it is, you know, their Hunger Games world that they aspire for. Middle class is a hindrance. They don't want anyone to be able to rise up through, the economic classes. They want a real firewall there. Serfs and rulers. Serfs and royalty. Slaves and royalty. That's what they want. They don't even need many slaves, given how automation and all that go, you know. They could definitely... And so, what I'm saying is that, so the 10th Amendment Center is, it's about enforcing the 10th Amendment and having states nullify. So you can go to, I think there's a 10th Amendment Center, you can check out there, but there's books, there's videos on nullification, and that is, you know, whether it's... the overarching spying program, you know, all of our invasions of privacy, the Federal Reserve fiat debt currency system, all this stuff is actually unconstitutional. It's a violation of a whole lot of the amendments. And the 10th Amendment says, basically, whatever it is that was not specifically spelled out as a duty of the federal government shall reside in the people and in the states. And, you know, it's not all these powers that the federal agencies, and there's dozens of them, that, you know, all these powers that they've amassed or through regulations have cordoned off different activities, reserved different rights to themselves, just based on regulations they hammer out with no oversight, basically, that's all null and void if a state chooses to make it so. And but then you get into the problem of, you know, blackmail, death, you know, murder, all sorts of things of anyone who may stand up to challenge the system. And so it's quite a dicey business. And they have ways of killing people where, hey, it looks like, you know, fast-acting cancer or it's a heart attack. Well, was it a heart attack? You know, that heart attack just happened? Well, believe me, they've got trillions of dollars, have had trillions of dollars over the last decade or two or more to refine the art of murder, the art of death, the black arts in general. And so they have it. So, you know, but our best bet is we're not going to be able to change the federal government very well. It's compromised. And these national debates and whatnot, they're mostly a distraction. If there's someone you really want to get behind, then, you know, go ahead. But the fights really is for state sovereignty, state rights. Let the states do what they want. And if they want to withhold the IRS taxes, which were not that whole 14th Amendment or whatever it was that supposedly created the IRS and the Federal Reserve, they promised to not tax your labor, and or to keep it at 2% or whatever it was, and it was not ratified by 3/4 of the state as required by the Constitution. So the whole thing's a fraud. But when it comes down to frauds, what really matters is who's got the gun. Well, the federal government has the gun. But we can take back some power, and we've got to do it politely, but be very insistent and ultimately be willing to give up your life. It's going to be these suckers, if they're spraying us to kill us, they're killing millions of people abroad under, under the fraud of the war on terror. You know, there's no telling. They're not going to cede control to decent human beings with the positive vision that's not a technocratic, what's that word? Merging of man and machine. If we want a real life, like the Native Americans, thinking about the impacts on the next seven generations, like that company, seventh generation, which refers to the necessity to consider the impact of what you're doing right now on the next seven generations. And that couldn't be farther from the mindset today. They're poisoning the planet now so they don't have to pay the promises of various pension plans and insurance plans and whatever else they've promised to people in order to keep people quiet the last 40 years. Keep people thinking that there's hope. And the whole system is a Ponzi scheme built on debt that can never be paid back. And the way the elites see to settle the financial score is to just kill everybody or a large number of people. That's really what it is. If it were to be known, if they only knew in 1913 that giving the bankers control of the financial, feeding us debt instead of constitutional money, which is gold and silver, that the end result would be the extermination of everyone using the power in the black hand, the black arts, behind the throne, 100 years later, 120, whatever it is, 2020, 2025, 30, it's coming up. I don't know what will be here in 10 years. They are spraying like you can't believe. 7 years ago, it was not like this. 5 years ago, not like this. This is an altogether, it's an enormous escalation of the campaign to of seeding us with this particulate matter. But so where was I? Just do the best you can to stay healthy and support. You do need to support those few organizations that are actually cognizant of the true issues at hand. And in that case, there are some groups acting to reduce exposure reduce our exposure to EMF. They're critical. Same thing goes with the spraying campaigns, and that would be the Carnicum Institute that actually is studying this, you know, what's in there. And then the geoengineeringwatch.org, and he is, Dane Wigginton is a true warrior. He's very hardcore. You know, his severity is just a sight to behold. You know, his single-minded focus on this matter. I don't know what to say other than that, and God bless him. And then the separation of powers. We need to have more independent actors in this world. You know, that means Libya should have been left alone. They had the highest standard of living, the highest literacy rate, and a whole bunch of other top marks in the continent of Africa. But because he didn't support the neoconservatives' intention to destroy Iran, and he wanted to have a gold-backed currency, real money, and accept gold for his oil, he had to be taken out. Same goes for Egypt. You know, anyone that got, and also Iraq. Even people that were originally puppets, over time, you know, CIA plants, as was Saddam Hussein, they became more nationalistic over time. And, you know, that's what you do. You live among the people, you believe in the people, and, you know, Saddam Hussein was very Western in his tastes. He liked Marlon Brando and had a big movie collection. He liked his, you know, his multi-$1,000 fine tailored suits from London and Paris. You know, hey, so he was a tyrant who kept a lot for himself, but he did a lot more for his people, and he protected the culture. They had museums, all this, with all the ancient antiquities. And the word is that the Israelis and some other black operators got in there right before our bombing campaign and stole everything. All those antiquities are now in private hands. We have destroyed our collective memory of Sumerian culture, the birthplace of our civilization. But, you know, there's so many tragedies there, but... Anyway, so a state becoming more independent in the U.S. is as unpalatable, unacceptable, and unthinkable to the neoconservative, eugenicist, technocratic elite as Libya's independence. And, you know, they're going to do the same. They would like to do probably the same kind of color revolution, you know. Stir up whatever dissent. They want to divide each state. So each state, they want to have, you know, a whole bunch of immigrants in there that don't have any understanding of what it means to be an American, our history of freedom, independence, etc. They don't want to make every state be unmanageable. And certainly, you know, if a lot of these newcomers want free money from the federal government, well, it's not free money. It's the high wage earning citizens of each state, and then the bankrupt policy of debt printing, you know, that creates the welfare state. But you know, if you threaten to reduce or cut off the perks to the plebeians that just want a free ride, then they will revolt against any state that wants to do the right thing from within, and that's the. It's called the Saul Alinsky. I think he was a teacher of Barack Obama's. But Saul Alinsky. He has some books. I think the Something Radical. But his old approach was, let's bankrupt the central government with welfare, get everyone dependent on the government, and create... division. He was an expert on creating division, and that was all to further the consolidation of state power through fostering dependency and division. Isn't that great? I think he also was an inspiration to Hillary Clinton. You know, anyone with self-respect is not going to be seeking to divide neighbors among themselves or to create a dependent class. But that's exactly what these, I don't know what they are, fascists, communists, you know, central government worshipers, you know, that's what the people who want central government controlling everything, that's the strategy they've used. And I think it's a, I don't know if it's Sun Tzu's The Art of War. I think there's some ancient doctrines on war, and that's, they talk about how the best way to win a war is to kill the enemy from within. You know, have the enemy wound itself, fight in its side of itself, so you don't have to raise a finger. You know, create a civil war, or foster the conditions for a civil war to occur. And then, you know, come in 5 years later as a knight in shining armor, say, I'm here to save you, but I'm the guy who wanted and created the conditions for this civil war to occur. So you really, all you owe me is the end of a bayonet, really. So I don't know what to do in terms of the sprain, you know, giving him money, Dane Wiginton, and then, you know, maybe I should write letters to my Congress people. But I view anyone that can look at this and see and not be mortally concerned, you know, what's the point in talking to them really? But I haven't written a political letter in a long time, and I will likely vote and support the Green Party again. You know, if you can get a hold of the 2004 Green Party platform, and it's an extraordinary work of idealism and practicality. It would work if the evil running things would allow it, and of course it won't. But it's the most coherent path forward that I've read, and I found the Green Party candidates and the platform itself to be a lot more compelling and coherent than a libertarian vision. But I don't know enough about it. Don't take my word for that. It's just, I felt that some of these libertarians that I've heard have been just, you know, pro-business. Well, we need small business. We need successful business. But, you know, not caring about environmental protections or really anything. Just all they're looking at is the most... narrow of self-interest, you know, financial self-interest. And the Green Party is a much more of a broader, compassionate, but free of financial manipulation. You know, it aspires to that. So I'm going to vote Green Party. Anything more? No. My throat is sore. I'm sure I've sucked in a few tens of thousands of micron-sized aluminum particles in this hour. It'll take me some time to clean it, to expel all this. Over and out.